So for instance, if you have your effective action, and then generically, if your theory is interacting, you have coupling constant. That is the coefficient in front of the scalar operators in your theory. And then the renormalization group flow tells you what will be the evolution of this coupling constant under the renormalization group. So you can define the beta function for the scalar operator as, or scalar coupling constant, as a response of the coupling constant under the renormalization group. In a similar way, I can consider, hypothetically, introducing the background coupling vector that couples with various vector operators in your theory. And then I can define the beta functions for these background source fields, vector source fields, by a response of this background vector source under the renormalization. So this is the subject I'd like to study today, and I'd like to explain what will be the properties of these vector beta functions in general. So, but why do we care? First of all, the reason why people haven't thought about it, these objects very much is precisely because such background vector field will violate the Poincaré invariance. But for me, it is not a big problem because, for instance, if you consider the finite temperature field of theories and if you introduce chemical potential, for instance, this is precisely what you will introduce in your theory. And also, I'd like to explain if you consider the situation in which the coupling constants are space-time dependent, then you are inevitably introducing this background vector source field because of this non-trivial renormalization group flow for this vector background. So this can be important if you consider the computational supersymmetric partition functions by using localization technique because you are introducing the space-time dependent coupling constant. Also, you may have to introduce a background vector source field in such a computations. And also, it can be important in the situation you have a domain walls, like renormalization group domain walls, where the coupling constants are space-time dependent. And also, I'd like to explain how these renormalization beta functions will explain, for example, various anomalous dimension. Of vector operators as well as scalar operators. And of course, these kind of objects are very important in cosmology as well as condensed matter applications. So let's see how it works. So what I'd like to show you today is the following five properties of the renormalization group beta functions for these vector operators. So the first property I'd like to explain is the so-called compensated gauge invariance. By which, I mean, you can assign certain background field transformations for the coupling constant as well as vector fields so that this vector beta functions transforms as a kind of a covariant object. And second thing I'd like to show you is the orthogonality relation. Which tells you that the vector beta functions and scalar beta functions are somewhat orthogonal with each other. And the third property I'd like to explain is the so-called Higgs-like relation. Between this vector beta functions and anomalous dimension. So the anomalous dimension of the vector operators can be understood as a kind of a Higgs mechanism, which will be more manifest if I consider the holographic dual, if I have time today. And the fourth property I'd like to propose is the gradient property. And by which I mean that the, like scalar beta functions, these vector beta functions can be generated as a kind of a gradient flow. And finally, I'd like to tell you there is a kind of non-linearization theorem. That tells you that the vector beta function is zero if and only if the corresponding vector operators are conserved. So our strategy today is to first explain what I mean by these five properties, and then I'd like to show you how to compute these vector beta functions in examples, such as the conformal perturbation theories or holography, and see how these properties can be realized in these examples. So, let's see. Yeah, let me explain this. So let me explain the first properties, the compensated gauge invariance. So to understand the structures of the vector beta functions or beta functions in general, it is very convenient to uplift all the coupling constant into a background field. And then you consider the so-called generating functional of various source field. So in general, you can make the background curved if you wish. And then you can study the properties. And then, well, you assume that this generating functional is renormalized in the sense that if you change the cutoff, then the change of the cutoff can be absorbed by the change of these background source fields, Gi and MuX. And then this power counting renormalizability tells you that the vector beta functions in general can be expanded as follows. So vector beta function is a vector, and the renormalizability tells you that this vector must be expanded, that the available vector are the same energy scale or same renormalization scale, which is one of which is the derivative of the scalar coupling constant, and the other is this vector field itself. But the claim of this gauge invariance is that this must be, this combination must be combined into the form of the covariant derivative. So covariant derivative means that GI transforms under as a certain representation of the symmetry or broken symmetry generated by these vector fields. And the reason why this kind of gauge invariance we have is that you have conservation equations or broken conservation equations or operator identity. You have, and this tells you that if you do the gauge transformations like this in this Schrödinger functional or source functional, then by doing this integration by part, then you can rewrite the contribution from this gauge transformation into the transformation or the background source fields. So you can compensate, well, you can think of it as introducing a background compensated gauge transformation for the coupling constant so that you can compensate the gauge transformation for the background field by the change of the coupling constant. Therefore, every formula we would like to write down for this vector beta function must be covariant under the compensated gauge transformation we introduce, and that's why the vector beta function must be expanded as a covariant derivative acting on this coupling constant GI. Then I can explain the orthogonality relations between scalar beta functions and vector beta functions. So this orthogonality condition tells you that if you expand the vector beta function with respect to the covariant derivative acting on the coupling constant GI, then you also have these scalar beta functions. And then I claim that the vector beta functions and scalar beta functions are orthogonal with each other in the sense that if you multiply the vector beta functions and scalar beta functions, it must give you zero. And this is a kind of a non-trivial constraint on this scalar beta functions as well as vector beta functions. For instance, in our standard model, there are like 72 constraint, non-perturbative constraints on the form or the beta functions we have in your theory. So beta functions cannot be arbitrary. So if you multiply the scalar beta functions and the vector beta functions, then these must be orthogonal with each other. And I'd like to later explain why this holds by using the local renormalization group technique. Then, let's see. So this is the second property. And the third property I have is that the vector beta functions, by using vector beta functions, you can compute various anomalous dimensions. For instance, I can compute the anomalous dimension of the scalar operators, and then the formula of this anomalous dimension is so you may know the anomalous dimension is given by the derivative of the scalar beta functions, but actually there is a correction term that comes from this vector beta functions. So this is the correct formula of the anomalous dimensions that can be computed not only from the scalar beta functions, but also from these vector beta functions. And similarly, you can compute the anomalous dimension of the current operators. And then this is given by, let's see. By using the vector beta functions. And this Tij, Tik is a representation matrix of G under the compensated gauge transformation I have introduced. I'm confused. Anyway, I don't use this blackboard.
So, attached to the vector
yes.
Which uses only scalar vectors and not say tensors.
Well, you can introduce other operators too if you wish. But for our purpose, I don't introduce these operators. Oh, so okay, you can introduce energy momentum tensor for definiteness. But energy momentum tensor is generically not renormalized, so we don't have beta functions for the energy momentum tensors. And the reason why I focus on these vector operators and scalar operators are because they can be relevant. Other operators have, from the unitarity band, has higher dimension, so most of the situations they are irrelevant. It's not that important in the study of the renormalization group flow. But these vector operators can have a dimension less than d, then this can be relevant deformations that will break, for instance, Lorentz invariance or Poincaré invariance in these situations.
For the gauge invariance, don't you need
conservation current? So usually you need, if you do not transform your coupling constant simultaneously, you do need a conservation. And on the other hand, I assume that the vector operators generically is non-conserved, something like this. But still, you can introduce the background gauge transformation as long as you will also transform the coupling constant. So in other words, your Lagrangian might have something like, I don't know. And then you may say that, for example, originally you'd like to get a U1 for 5-4 interaction, but this interaction will break the such symmetry. But if you assign the charge to the background coupling constant, you can compensate the symmetries or broken symmetry so that it is possible to gauge it in your theory. So, okay, so this is the third property I'd like to explain. And the fourth property I'd like to propose is that this vector beta function is actually a gradient. So I do claim there is a generating, well, there is a gauge invariant local functional from which you can derive the vector beta functions. And this is similar to the claim that scalar beta functions is given by a gradient flow. So in which case people have considered, for instance, what is called a function as a function of the coupling constant. And if you derive this a function with respect to the coupling constant, you do get the scalar beta functions. And similarly, I do claim that there is a local gauge invariant functional from which you can compute the vector beta functions. Actually, a similar relation was proposed by Sun-sik Lee in the case of the holographic dual. Yes.
Last year, there was a paper by Silverstein and collaborators which considered position-dependent marginal coupling.
Yes. Yes.
So a marginal kind of operator can turn into
to non-trivial fixed point. Yeah.
Can you understand this in your setup?
Yes, actually.
Like,
yes. Okay, it's related in the sense that what they did is they only introduced the neutral coupling constant that is not charged under the vector field I have introduced. So in their situations, there is no vector beta functions because they didn't consider such a situations. But in more generic situations, so this formula tells you that as long as your background scalar field is space-time dependent, and also if the this scalar is in particular charged under the gauge symmetry, you are introducing as a background transformation. And then this tells you that you are inevitably introducing the vector field background because of this renormalization group flow. So in generic situations, I think they have to consider the introduction of this background vector field at the same time. But since they only consider the simplest situation in which there is no current operators in your CFT, then they didn't consider it. But in generic situations, you have to consider this such a bug. Yes.
Don't you also need a Siegel term?
These are long.
The whole background.
Yes, yeah, yes, yes. So I started with a Lagrange. Well, the linear order Lagrangian that start with this GI OI plus MU and JMU. And I neglected higher order terms. But in order to, depending on how this JMU transforms under the gauge transformation, you have to add and more term to make this action invariant. And As long as you are interested in the situations in the flat Minkowski spacetime where mu is turned off, then these additional terms only give the contact term in the correlation functions. So you don't have to, it is okay to neglect all these terms, but if you'd like to consider the finite background, you may have to keep track of all these higher terms as well. But this is not universal, and it depends on the details of your theory. And these properties don't care what these terms are. So non-linearization theorem I'd like to propose is that this, the condition that the vector beta function vanishes is equivalent to the claim that the corresponding background current operator is conserved. And again, well, you can see how this works. For instance, if you look at this anomalous dimension matrix form. So we know that typically that whenever your current is conserved, the anomalous dimension is zero. And this is precisely what is happening whenever this formula tells you that anomalous dimension is zero if and only if this action of this vector beta function is non-trivial on the coupling constant, which is equivalent to the conservation equation written down here. Because generically, I started with non-conservation. Of the coupling of these current operators, and then this will eventually source this anomalous dimension term appearing there. Okay, now let me show you how to compute these vector beta functions in conformal perturbation theories, and then check how these. Conditions are met in examples. Actually, today there is an interesting paper by Konechner who studied the higher order conformal perturbation theory to compute the vector beta functions. But I'd like to focus on the first non-trivial order in conformal perturbation theory. In any dimension. So the conformal perturbation theory begins with deforming your CFT action with small coupling constant coupled with the scalar operators. And now we allow the space-time dependent coupling constant here. And then the next assumption is that you have the standard OPE of this. And for simplicity, I'm working in the situation in which this operator is marginally relevant, which means that it has a dimension d. So the OPE starts with x minus y to 2d. So you have this standard 3-point function terms in the OPE, which, as we will see, is related to the beta functions of the scalar operators. But in addition, I do introduce a key ingredient here. that is that this OP of this O, so scalar operators contain the vector operators. And this precisely tells you, from this, you can understand how the operator equations are modified. So originally, this current is conserved in the unperturbed CFT, but after perturbing by this operator, then this conservation law is modified. So that the current is no longer conserved after introducing the first order perturbation of this CFT like this. And then you can see how this renormalization goes as usual. And for instance, if you do the second order perturbation theory, started with this CFT Lagrangian perturbed by these operators, then from this term, there is a logarithmic divergence, which is proportional to this operator. So you have to renormalize this scalar coupling constant. And this is this leads to the well-known formula to relate the scalar beta functions to the three-point functions in CFT like this. But the interesting point is that there is an additional divergence coming from this OPE. So if you do the second order conformal perturbation theory, then this OPE gives you additional divergence whenever the coupling constant is spacetime dependent. And this gives you the first non-trivial order computation of the vector beta functions in conformal perturbation theory. So I haven't introduced the background source for the vector field, but if I introduce the background source, then this derivative becomes covariant derivative. And so this is precisely the form I have expected in the vector beta functions. So I can check various properties of the vector beta functions I have proposed. For instance, you can see how the vector beta functions and the scalar beta functions are orthogonal with each other. So I would like to check, for instance, like this from the formula here. And you can actually see that. I don't know whether this is. So C is a certain representation matrix of this of this scalar coupling constant in your theory. And then, and by using the fact that Cijk is actually a symmetric tensor, then this vanishes. So in the first order perturbation theory, or the second order perturbation theory, you can see that the vector beta functions and scalar beta functions are orthogonal with each other. And for instance, you can also construct the generating function or this gradient potential of these vector beta functions, which is essentially the kinetic term or the background scalar fields. So if you derive this kinetic term with respect to this background vector field mu, then you do get this vector beta function. Yes? This one?
Or,
yes, okay, so actually this point, this is a very interesting question. So for now I concentrate on the on the potential for the the effective action or effective potential for the vector beta functions. And then if I only derive this vector action with respect to mu, I got this. And this part is also a kind of a great, has a potential. So you can start with gijk and gijjgk. If you derive this with respect to g, you do get this. And the natural question is, you can have this master functional that combines this potential term as well as a kinetic term. And then if you derive this and this master functional, whether you get the beta functions for the scalar operator as well as vector operators simultaneously. And then this gives back to the question whether if I derive this vector part with respect to GI, then you do get the Laplacian or the kinetic energy for the beta functions for these scalar operators too. So the question is whether there can be additional terms, something like this. And I don't have a definite answer to this question. And one thing I can say is that if I follow the conventional power counting linearization, this doesn't appear because suppose if this were dimensionless, then this must be dimensionless, but it has a dimension too. So dimensionally, it doesn't match. But at the same time, in the Wilsonian linearization group scheme, there is a possibility to generate such terms. And indeed, if you do the holographic linearization scheme, then there is a recent paper by, I think, Kiritusis and Nitti and other guys who claims that there is an additional term, something like a kinetic term for the computation with beta functions in the holographic setup. And probably you do have such terms in quantum field theory too. But it is an open question. Okay, so let's see. Yeah. I don't have a, okay, so let's see. Yeah. I want to say something about the holography. So let me. Give you a very brief sketch of how I can prove some of these claims I made here. For instance, I think it is very interesting to see how these orthogonality relations. So, can appear or can be derived by using the locally normalization group. So locally normalization group says that, so you start with this functional And then you require that this functionality is renormalized in the sense that it has a kind of a local, it satisfies a local Kalantzic equation, which means that so the claim of the local renormalization group is that if you act this local renormalization group operator on this background or this Schrödinger source functional, is zero up to wider anomaly. And the structure of this wider anomaly here is very interesting, but I'm focusing on the situation in which this anomaly can be neglected. And what I mean by this is that if you change the cutoff in your theory in a position-dependent way, so this sigma is a position-dependent value transformation factor, or the position-dependent change of the renormalization scale may be canceled by changing the coupling constant as well as the background vector fields. And this is, and this is equivalent to the claim that you have the identity, like a trace of the energy moment tensor is given by beta function times OI. And like this. So this is the equivalent to the claim that the trace of the energy moment tensor is given by the beta functions. But anyway, from this, you can obtain very interesting results. And the key observation is that value transformation is abelian. So this is the claim that the local renormalization group transformations must commute. And for this to work, you cannot have arbitrary beta functions, scalar beta functions, as well as these vector beta functions. And if you just do a simple computation here, and then in order for this to be true, then indeed, the scalar are beta functions and vector beta functions must be orthogonal with each other. Otherwise, these integrability conditions of the local renormalization group operator does not work. And actually, this equation plays an important role to derive, for instance, the perturbative A theorem based on this local renormalization group analysis, and so on and so on. Or if you'd like to propose, or if you'd like to show that beta functions the scalar beta functions are kind of a gradient flow, you have to use these kind of properties. So this, the integrability conditions of the local renormalization group operators is very important to understand the properties of this renormalization group in general. And I'd like to emphasize that this equation cannot be derived if you just consider the constant value transformation or scalar transformation, but this is an important consequence of the fact that you can uplift all the coupling constant into background fields, And you can consider the transformations, world transformations that act as a local renormalization group transformations. Okay, so in a similar fashion, you can derive other properties I propose, like the relation between anomalous dimension and these vector beta functions by using these local renormalization group equations. But let me finish my talk by saying a few words about the holographic computations of these vector beta functions. So first of all, we have to realize the non-conserved current operators in holography. And my claim is that these non-conserved current operators or non-conserved vector operators in holography is realized by the spontaneously broken gauge fields in the bulk. So suppose you have this, So then you have some essentially Maxwell equations in the bulk, except that this right-hand side contains the current, and then this current or charge spontaneously break the gauge invariance. So for instance, if the current is given by some matter fields in the bulk,
IJ.
So the current can be computed from the matter Lagrangian. And then, for instance, the matter is given by the nonlinear Schirmer model. Then the explicit form of the current is something like this. And if you assume that this phi acquires non-zero BEV, so that the gauge symmetries in the bulk is spontaneously broken, then this gives you the, first of all, this gives a mask to the background, so mass to this bulk vector fields. And then this vector field acquires anomalous dimension, which is no longer conserved. And then the right-hand side of this equation can be regarded as the vector beta functions. So from this, you can derive the vector beta functions. Like this, which is essentially the charge or the current or the background or the scalar fields in the bulk, which is dual to the coupling constant. So the scalar field in the bulk is dual to the scalar coupling constant in the boundary, and the vector fields in the bulk is dual to the non-conserved vector operators in the boundary. And this gives you the relations between the vector beta functions and the effective action of these scalar fields in the bulk.
Question?
Yes.
Can I do the same thing with the Chern-Simons term in the bulk? I've seen equations like this with like hooked anomalies for foreign mesh negation. So when you don't have a constant or conserved current anymore and you have an anomaly.
Yes. I'm not sure whether there is contributions from the Chern-Simons term, and well, the situation is a little bit different. For instance, in three dimension, and you can introduce the mass for this non-conserved current by using the Chern-Simons interaction in three-dimensional bulk, which is dual to the two-dimensional CFTs. And in two-dimensional CFTs, there are additional mechanisms that will give you this. Well, so in two dimension, left mover and right mover can be decoupled, so there is a more non-trivial way to introduce the mass term.
Right, but I'm asking in four dimensions.
In four dimensional bulk.
I don't have a gravitational anomaly, but I do have these kinds of anomalies. I mean, the
Oh, you mean you'd like to study the four-dimensional
gauge theory.
Yes, I think it is possible that, yeah. So if I have a I don't know what does it mean in the from the CFT or the boundary theory viewpoint, because I mean from the dimensional analysis there is no such term you can write down in the right hand side. So if you have so this means that you have multiple, I mean, vector fields appearing in the right-hand side, but there is no, from the dimensional analysis, there is no term you can write down in such a way. But in a similar way, I have discussed before about the fate of this possibility to have some, all these dimension-free terms on the right-hand side. Then in the Wilsonian sense, there might be additional terms that you can write down in these equations to be explained by the chance, well, some Chern-Simons-like term in the five-dimensional bulk.
So is this, do you have some specific example of holographic model when this would happen? Something along the lines of holographic superconducting behavior?
Oh, you mean in the explicit string construction, or I can write down any effective Lagrangian that gives you the spontaneous. As a model, I can write down, well, you start with this gauge theories in, say, five-dimensional LDS spacetime, and coupled with some scalar fields. And then scalar fields have some, like, Mekeskan hat potentials that breaks the gauge symmetry spontaneously. Then this is dual to the situation in which the current operator is no longer conserved, but has some right-hand side on the current conservation equations. And then this gives you some non-trivial mass to the vector fields, which corresponds to the non-trivial non-zero vector beta functions, as well as anomalous dimensions, and so on. Yes, yeah, it's.
You're saying by hand you can do that. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's. I don't know why this, but there is some difficulty to construct to break the spontaneous symmetry, like people have tried in the condensed matter applications, like constructing super conductor in ADS-CFT. It seems a little bit hard to, spontaneously break the gauge symmetry in the bulk. I don't know why, but I don't know what will be the best examples that shows the spontaneous symmetry breaking in the bulk from the string construction. But there is no reason. There is no reason why this cannot happen in general. And indeed, this is what is usually happening in the gauge theory computation or the boundary field theory viewpoint. Okay, so let me, before I finish this talk, let me say a few words. Okay, so let me derive some other properties from these holographic computations. And for instance, the orthogonality. And for this, you have to also know the beta functions for the scalar operators. But holographic construction of this scalar beta function is well known. So you start with a superpotential, and then the derivative of the superpotential gives you a kind of a gradient flow in the holographic computation of the beta functions. And then you can check whether this orthogonality holds by explicitly multiplying this scalar beta function, holographic scalar beta functions, and holographic vector beta functions. And the key point is that this superpotential is gauge invariant. So this, if I multiply the scalar beta functions and vector beta functions, you will get to zero. And similarly, you can show that the gradient, we can construct essentially, the kinetic term of the scalar fields in the bulk generates these vector beta functions as a gradient. And there is a debate whether if I derive this effective kinetic term with respect to phi, there is a contributions to the scalar beta functions. But at least you can generate these vector beta functions by deriving this effective functional in the bulk. And you can also check the anomalous dimensions of these current operators by from this spontaneous symmetry breaking. And then you can see that this formula agrees with the one I have shown you before here. So this formula can be checked directly in the holographic perspective. And also, finally, the nonlinearization theorem can be understood as the fact that in order to get the massless fields in the bulk, which corresponds to the conserved current in the boundary theory, you do need the gauge symmetries. And conversely, in order to get the non-zero vector beta functions, you have to break the gauge invariance. So this is almost what I wanted to say today. And so in summary, I have introduced the vector beta functions. And then I have shown you various properties of these vector beta functions. And I said that there are 72 vector beta functions you can compute in the standard model. And there is a very interesting structures of these vector beta functions that tells you something deep in the structure of the renormalization group flow. And one thing I wanted to understand in the future study is that whether there is a similar monotonicity if you introduce not only the scalar coupling constant, but also these Poincaré breaking background sources. And for instance, these gradient properties of the scalar beta functions is pretty much related to the monotonicity of the A function, for instance. So from this, you can easily derive that this A function is monotonically decreasing along the renormalization group flow. And I was wondering whether a similar thing can be said if I consider this kind of effective functional for the vector beta functions and study the flow induced by this vector background. So let me stop here, and thank you very much.